thank you all for sticking through. I had a lot of coffee, so I think this will be great. I thought to like round it off to go back to Rousseau's main thesis, namely that humans and artificial epistemic agents together co-produce or together produce knowledge. And I focus specifically on the notion of artificial agents, because in my project, I'm focusing on how to conceptualize artificial agency in a scientific research context. So I thought as well, to give some background, given how I thought of our project, it's quite different than what Thomas said. So you will also get a different view now, because I think that over the 2.5 years that we have now been working on this, I think that we focus a lot on how to use automated systems to perform scientific tasks. And in thinking about this, we create a kind of space to say, okay, of course we can use them purely in an instrumental way, but what we're after, or what at least within AI research, what they are trying to do, is that automated systems perform more and more of the research process by themselves. And thinking about what this by themselves means, you quite quickly start to think about agency. Because agency in and maybe I already carve here out of space, because we have talked about agency. And we have talked about agency in a specific research context. And I think what I've been trying to conceptualize is really agency as a phenomenon out there in the world. So if we have this intuitive grasp of what we encounter, what we feel when we encounter other agents, I try to kind of grasp what this is, what it is that we are thinking about, or what we see in other entities when we would call them agents. And in the philosophy of mind, action, and now also agency, agents have been described as entities that things can be up to. And what I want to do during this talk is, first of all, show the difference between how the term agents is currently in use in computer science and AI, and ask the question whether the more narrow understanding of agent in philosophy can be applicable in this computer science AI context. To do so, I have been quite inspired, and I've been inspired some more, but by the book of these levels of abstraction. Because given that the term agent is used in such a wide area, and I think during this workshop we have talked already about very many different meanings of agents. So for me to make clear what I'm talking about and what I'm interested in, I need to talk about different levels of abstraction of understanding agents. So I will be referring to that a lot. Thank God there are also GIFs, as always. So let's start there. because I want to make clear what we think about, how we think about agents in philosophy. If we think about entities being out there in the world, we would roughly put them into two categories if we do an agent divide, where non-agents are entities that things merely happen to, and agents would then be entities or systems or however you want to describe that things can be up to. So things can be up to an agent in a way that they cannot be up to a non-agent. If we think of external factors like a gust of wind, then we would say that the leaf on your right side is moved by the external factor of the wind. The duck is also moved by the external factor of the wind, but only the duck can then do something later that's up to the duck itself, or at least how we perceive it as if the duck can move by itself. Whatever the ontological status of it is, I won't go into. But at least we perceive it as being capable of more than a leaf, And I would like to describe it as that things can be up to the duck, like where it would move to. Okay. Thank God Andrea already discussed kind of the agent notion in computer science. And here we also have an agent, we also have an environment, we also have interactions with this environment. But the main thing for an agent in this computer science AI approach, I would say, is that they can interact with their environment. How? And if this is because things are up to them, if these interactions truly are up to them, is not that important. Systems are described as agents as soon as they can interact with their environment. Okay, another GIF. So we have here two similar phenomena, or at least two situations that we can describe as kind of similar. We have, in two cases, a moving object that is interacting with its environment. We have a system that interacts with its environment. However, if we look at the soccer player, we would say that it's up to the soccer player whether or not he shoots the ball or not. Yes? But with the robot, this is not as clear-cut, because it might be that it's controlled by its programming or that it's controlled by an external computer. It is not as seemingly clear whether it is the robot itself that kicks the ball or whether it has been directed to do so. Now, if we think in levels of abstraction, then we would say that in philosophy, if we hold on to this notion that agents are entities that things can be up to, then the soccer player is an agent and the robot is a non-agent. However, if we look at a level of abstraction in computer science and AI, both would count as agents because they are both systems that interact with their environment. My question, to kind of put it bluntly again, is can we use this notion of agent and apply it to certain automated systems in, for example, science. Yes? Everyone with me? Great. Okay, of course you can ask why talk about agency in the first place? And this is a question I've gotten a lot, because why not use just system? Or why not just go for the term agent if with the notion or how it is used in computer science, we can describe them both as agents. Why be difficult? Well, because there have been quite a lot of developments in AI research that are quite interesting. Andrea talked about them quite a lot already, but when she mentioned self-driving laboratories, if you see the whole self-driving laboratory as an agent, as a potential agent, then even though we might have given it or learned it what an hypothesis is, how you generate hypotheses, how you test hypotheses, even when it has a little limited amount of data that it hasn't collected yet itself, then a self-driving laboratory can, for a number of days, without human interventions, generate, test, and interpret hypotheses on its own. Even though this might be limited, also in how far it's able to interpret these hypotheses, one could argue that in some way you could make the argument that it's up to the self-driving laboratory how it interprets or tests these hypotheses. In the team of Andrea again, sorry, I'm just going to point at you a lot. There was also an algorithm developed for in simulated environments to do quantum error correction by itself. Quantum error correction, if you have to go get feedback from the scientists whether or not to do this quantum, correct me if I'm wrong, do this quantum error correction, you lose a lot of speed. And the great thing is, if we can let an algorithm do this quantum error correction, we can still keep up with the speed that we want with quantum physics, kind of, very roughly. So this algorithm has to decide in the moment itself whether or not to correct a quantum error and how to correct it. again, even though this is in a simulated environment, you could say that this is more than just interacting with an environment. This is something that one could argue is up to this algorithm, how to correct. We could also talk about GPT-4, mainly about us giving a prompt. There is an eventual result that relates back to the prompt, but the in-between steps and how to go about producing this result might again be in some limited way up to GPT-4. The point I want to make is just that this notion of agent, when understood in a more narrow sense, can carry a lot of explanatory power on its own. And I think that this is a very useful explanatory power to make a distinction between what is happening now with these AI systems that are new. And I think Thomas made the same point. We want this notion of agent to do this function because there is no other term that can perform this function on its own. So we might want to carve out a space, a level of abstraction to meaningfully talk about what's happening now in AI research, where it might be going, and maybe this term is artificial agency. Okay, now that we have that, we go to the book. As Federica said so well, she aims to give an account of the co-production of knowledge. Instruments do not produce phenomena alone. Scientists do not develop theory alone. Human and artificial epistemic agents together produce knowledge. Of course, I'm interested in this co-production because it suggests for epistemic artificial agents kind of an active role. And also in what she then means by artificial epistemic agents. Let's recap again. So I'm interested in agency, and this relates to the epistemic artificial agents. I'm interested in the active role that they can play in a techno-scientific practice. So for me, this account was very interesting to see how it could help me answer the question how to conceptualize artificial agency in a techno-scientific practice. So, at the first glance, this account would help me out a lot, but this depends a lot on whether this artificial epistemic agent could be understood at the level of abstraction that I'm interested in, this philosophical level, and whether what is meant by this co-production. Because the co-production for the level that I'm interested in is really kind of an autonomous production. So, first things first, in the next slides, I will first tell who Federica thinks are the epistemic agents here. And then I will go over a couple of level abstractions and show where I think we can still count all the entities she counts as epistemic agents and where not, at which level of abstraction. And the conclusion for me would be that I would say not analog instruments, and maybe if we go all the way to my level of abstraction, maybe not even most technologies and machines. But this is not to say that I don't agree with this, because I agree with this. I think this is a very important role. I just don't necessarily agree at every level of abstraction to the kind of entities or system that counts as such agents. Okay. So, human epistemic agents are the humans, very clear. And then the artificial epistemic agents that Federica mentions are instruments, technologies, and machines. Yes? Okay, now I have a nice yellow thing. And we have already heard Floridi. I have also argued against Floridi, and now that I've read more of him, maybe I was a bit too soon in arguing against him, but he, at the first law, at the most abstract level I think we can think about, is when we see all entities as informational entities, where you can think of an entity as an informational structure, right? A structure that belongs together, where some of these informational entities are agents. Those informational entities that are agents would be a system situated within and a part of an environment which initiates a transformation, produces an effect, or exerts power on the environment over time. I think if we have this notion of agent, then it makes sense to talk about all these different instruments as epistemic agents. I would totally agree there, because even if we think of an analog instrument as a microscope, then this microscope transforms how we think about the world, right? So this makes intuitive sense. However, if we think about agents as transition systems, so this is in the book, Russo says that she adopts this concept of agent as developed by Floridi. And Floridi says, okay, if we think about agents as informational entities, we could even count an earthquake as an agent, so this doesn't make much sense. So let's think instead about agents as transition systems that have the characteristics of interactivity, autonomy, and adaptability. So let's do exactly that, but I already told you that my conclusion would be that if we accept these three key characteristics, then I would count out the analog instruments, and depending on how you define a digital instrument, a technology or machine, maybe also others, but for now I let it be. Okay, what do we mean by interactivity? Interactivity means that the agent and its environment can act upon each other. If we think back of the agent definition in computer science and AI, this is this interaction with the environment, right? So any kind of system that in any way interacts with its environment would have this interactivity notion. However, if you think about agents in my level of abstraction, in the philosophy level of abstraction, you come back to Stewart, who was already discussed by Thomas, where she says acting is something that's up to the agent. So acting could be understood as settling things, where it's in the end the agent that decides whether something happens or not. And I kind of feel that this is an important notion, and even when you don't really feel it that way, I would say at least there needs to be an option for the agent to act, to not act. So rather than either having to act this way or that way, each agent needs to be able to withhold acting. Even when it has to act at some point, we all have to go to the toilet at one point, but I can decide, I keep holding on until the end of my talk. So this would be a way to think about acting at a different level of abstraction. Yeah? Okay. Autonomy. Here, autonomy means that the agent is able to change its state without direct response to interaction. It can perform internal transitions to change its state, so an agent must have at least two states. I think this speaks to us as well. I think that most automated systems also fall into this category. One notion of basic agents of Liszt and Petit actually says that a basic agent has to have at least representational states, motivational states, like where it wants to go. So representational states is its current condition, motivational states is where it wants to go, and then it has the ability to change the representation in such a way that it aligns with the motivational state. So this would be autonomy also in a different way explained. And the third level is adaptability, meaning that the agent's interactions can change the transition rules by which it changes states. And I would say if you talk about adaptability, I would agree with both Andrea and with Thomas that here learning is a very important factor. So if you really want to be able to change your own internal rulebook, you need some kind of learning. Okay. This is just to show that already by changing a level of abstraction, you get a totally different view of what agents can be. I think this I will skip, because I think it's explained enough, and I agree that we should see agents as interacting with their environment, so I would say yes, agents are poietic agents. For me, it's just maybe analog instruments, again, are not poietic agents. So we also skip Simondon, which is maybe better for everyone. And now what I want to talk about is then, okay, what is then this level of abstraction in philosophy? Because I've been thinking about this, and in the book of Helen Stewart, she is mainly interested in the determinism debate, where she has a question of, can we be free in how we act? And I think even though this is an interesting question, it's also a question that we might not be able to answer. And what I was interested in is a notion of agent that maybe can be useful to programmers if they want to create an artificial agent. So it has to have some stability how we can think about it. And I really like this notion of things can be up to the agent, but I think, yeah, what do you mean? What can be up to you? In what way? How should we think about this notion? So my question was, if we think about autonomy, if we think about autonomous behavior as things can be up to the agent, how should we understand it? And I think here Edmund Husserl had a really nice notion of indeterminate determinability. It's not really useful in a sentence, but it's a great notion. You already saw Edmund Husserl when Alexander was like talking about phenomenology, so we have seen his face. and this indeterminate determinability, I think, really connects well to what Alexander was telling us about us being able to predict the walking lines of, or food searching lines of, the kinkajous and stuff. Because what Edmund Husserl is saying is that every individual, and I would say then every agent, has a certain history. It has a certain life experience that is for each agent different. At the same time, we're all walking through the same kind of environment, even when we experience this environment differently. Based on who we are, as a species, as a agent, a kind of agent, we are first determined by the kind of body that we're in. We are determined by the kind of environment that we have, and determined by the kind of history through which we move. However, since most of these histories align with other histories, we develop certain patterns of behavior. So, given that I'm a student, I usually walk around here. And you can kind of predict where I will go. I will either go to the Mensa or my office or go outside. So, given the history and the kind of patterns of behaviors that I have, each pattern of behavior provides me with a number of options. Of course, these patterns of behavior can exchange, so you might have certain options from the one pattern of behavior and other options from the other pattern of behavior that makes our eventual output, if we put it like this, not predictable. In the end, it's up to us, and it might be very determinant on our environment and history and nature, but in the end, it's very difficult in the end to predict what we are going to do. We might be, in the end, very often correct about what we're doing. We are very determinable, this is the difficult term, determinable beings, but because in the end we make the choice, it's up to us which of our options we choose, we are an indeterminate determinability. So we are, as agents, quite predictable, but we're not predictable all the way. Yes? Okay. Now that we have gone there, I would then say, now we can think as well like how the other characteristics that we have talked about agency, like adaptability, interactivity, learning, like how do they relate to these different impacts on the agent? So maybe our nature is for some one that can have intentions, where for more basic agents, this nature is more like a goal-directedness, or at least a kind of responsiveness. Given that we have a history, we need to be able to learn, right, from our experience. We could connect this learning both to our nature, but also to our history and to how we respond to our environment. So I would kind of, rather than start from learning or intentionality or interactivity, I would go for an overall view of an agent where we think of various categories that influence its behavior, rather than one specific nature. So, I think I was very fast, but maybe that's great. What I would do as a kind of general conclusion is that I totally agree that technologies play a fundamental role in the production of techno-scientific knowledge. I would not always characterize this role as active, but maybe as instrumental or passive. But this is, again, based on the level of abstraction that we're talking about. I would just suggest that for thinking about current state-of-the-art and future AI systems in the automation of science, the level of abstraction in the philosophical sense of indeterminate determinability, or however else you want to phrase it, but as things being up to the agent, that's a really nice notion to explain what the difference is that we're facing now. What we really want out of these systems, and how we can recognize them from older systems. So I would say that some technologies, when understood as artificial epistemic agents in this narrow philosophical sense, can play an active role in the sense that they co-produce knowledge together with human epistemic agents, but that, based on my notion, these are not all of the epistemic artificial agents that you carved out. Thank you.
Very nice, Maud. I obviously you have been thinking about agency way more than I did, but I would like to understand more your reasons to select this LOA and why this leads you to kind of exclude types of agents rather than include them, because I had the reasons, and I can go through them again, to be inclusive and to stress that in some cases even the analog technologies have some form of active role. But I suspect that my reasons or my motivation is very different from yours, and so depending on the motivation which is part of the LOA, I think I'm fine with your conclusion, but I think I want to know more about your motivation.
Okay. So indeed, I have been thinking about artificial agency now for 2.5 years. Yay! And I have 1.5 years more to go, so that's fun. For me, what was really important is that in all the accounts that I've read, there is always talk about moral agents, scientific agents, rational agents, epistemic agents, but I try to really go back to what is agent. What's an agent itself? So how can we think about this term, especially if we start thinking about artificial agents or artificial systems as having some form of agency? Probably in the beginning, this is a very basic form of agency. If we think about the quantum error correction case, then maybe only adaptability in that sense comes up and some form of autonomy, but what we if we start thinking about automated systems as agents, we need very basic notions, non-anthropocentric notions of agents that can be applicable to more than it being a living system, but not so big that everything can be included, because I still want, I would like to meaningfully distinguish between agents without having to rely on adjectives. So I would really, for the notion agent itself, to have some meaning, to talk about the distinction between current automated systems or future automated systems, also to carve out the kind of goal that at least a part in AI science is reaching for, because they are not just reaching for more advanced automated systems, they are reaching really for something like us, like animals, something that's more independent, more autonomous. And what I could see from literature is that the word autonomous is kind of interchangeably used with automated practices. And I think this is both for computer science and AI, as well for the literature on philosophy of agency, mind, and action, a really important distinction, because they are not the same. Because even when we try to describe us as agents, we would say that, or I would say that a lot of our behavior is automated, right? So if I walk and I call at the same time, or when I scratch myself or whatever, this is all behavior that I don't need to think about. But at the same time, there are certain behavior that I can do that at least appears to me and to others as kind of up to me. And I think there is not a term different than agent that is able to capture this phenomenon. And I was interested in capturing what we are speaking about that goes beyond this automation, that goes beyond what we are speaking about if we're just talking about instruments, where I think instruments have some power, but I think what these instruments do, how they influence our lives, maybe can be captured by other concepts just as well, and not just by them being an agent.
I think you are introducing something key now at the end, like the influence on our lives, you see, because you explained this again, and I was thinking, oh, but then she would like to be as inclusive as possible about agency, because all these things that have in common. And in the beginning, I thought that you were going to give a normative argument for why we may want to keep some types of artificial agents, but not all of them, and certainly not analog technologies, you see. But now it seems that you're giving a different twist to the reasons why you take this route. Maybe there is something more that we need to go through.
Yeah, because actually, now that I'm thinking on my feet, I'm also thinking like how we respond to agents, right? Mm. Changes, if I see a rock or some inanimate object, I respond to it differently than when I know that it can in some way interact with me. On a level that maybe a dog interacts with me, not necessarily a worm, but there's a different kind of response from us to agents than to non-agents.
But then you have social robotics in the back of your mind.
Also, you see? Yes. Social robotics, also just in general, we need to have, like if we think about just large language models, we need to be careful and treat it like a system that we cannot predict that much, right? That isn't interactive to us. And this asks of us a different kind of behavior towards it than when it's maybe a bit more predictable and we know how to interact with it.
Yeah. And I think your question is more in the direction of what it means to be an agent if we want an agent to interact with one another. And then clearly, if I interact with a meter to measure this, is not very interesting and does not satisfy, I mean, your requirements. Yeah. But a social robot, yes. But then all of a sudden, you have changed the question, and that is perfectly fine. And so your LOA is very kind of on a different even page. But yes. Very interesting.
Yeah, thank you, Maud, for the interesting talk. I have just one question. About this interactivity condition, I would call it. You said at one point that AI systems can interact with their environment and are therefore considered then as agents. And that, for example, when we want to differentiate human beings with AI systems, talk about other conditions which separate them, but that interactivity is no problem. So both AI systems can interact with their environment, also as human beings or animals. And I would just like to question this, because I think there's a sense of interactivity with the environment that is different for human beings than for AI systems, because what does interacting with the environment really mean? I mean, I can interact with the environment and just build something, but then maybe I have a purpose with it, and yeah, I construct something. And by constructing, of course, I interact with the environment, but as a human being, I might, in addition, have a purpose why I do this. And I think AI systems don't have it. So I think this is not the meaning that you have in mind when you talk about interactivity with the environment. Then it's something different.
Yeah. Because when I'm talking about interactivity here, this is at a level of abstraction when you think about agents and transition systems. And there, for me, I would already say that using this term of acting for me would be mean something totally different from where I'm thinking of. And I agree with you that if we talk about interactivity, I might say that some AI systems now do have a goal, or at least have some purpose, whatever that might mean. But this is already at a more advanced level than this kind of interactivity, what I think Floridi is here talking about. And there it's just like any kind of interaction with the environment.
So, okay.
Yeah. Thanks. I totally agree. Thanks.
I'm thinking about this all day long. I'm really curious about the difference between, we got analogous instruments there in your yellow box, and I'm wondering about them still being tools. I would totally say, so if you have a shovel and you dig in a hole, then there's no difference in the outcome. You're still digging a hole. I could totally dig it with my bare hands as well, and it would be the same hole in the end. It just takes a lot more time, I guess. But I think all the other categories, like digital instruments, technology, machines, or even AI systems, do something more to the work I'm prompting. For example, in ChatGPT, if I prompt something and it gives me out like a whole essay, then I'm pretty sure I couldn't write it the same way. I couldn't get to the same like goal that it did. And I was thinking about the same when Ms. Rousseau opened up with different kinds of tools, and we had like these huge telescopes, and I couldn't look this far into the universe, but this telescope does. So I think they are like, there's something more about them being mere tools. Like they actually, yeah, totally do something on top of that. I'm totally curious about that. What's your opinion? Would you agree that, like, I would say the only thing which is a tool here is the analogous instrument, which is a mere tool.
Yes.
Yeah.
As a mere tool. Okay. Yeah, because I think it depends on the context what counts as a tool or whether it counts as an instrument. But I agree, for example, with Federica Russo that there is something definitely that they add to us in a way that we cannot add ourselves. So I would say that they do fulfill a fundamental role, whether this role is then an active one in my kind of level of abstraction, I wouldn't say so. But where I do agree is that they change our world. I find the distinction then between a shovel and this macroscope very interesting, because I would need to think about this more, how they are different in a way, because I think for the first person discovering the shovel, it was quite a nice.
Yeah, quite the same. Yeah, like yeah. Changing
like,
everything.
Oh, great, not to use my hands. This is awesome. So I would say that at least technologies fulfill a certain role in our life that we cannot do ourselves. That we, or at least in knowledge production, there is a fundamental role for them, but what this is, how we should interpret this role, I'm not always in agreement with Rousseau. Yeah.
Thank you.
Cool. Thank you.
Maud, can you go back to the beginning of your talk, because I'm really trying to understand why you set up this discourse in the way you do, because the way in which you were phrasing it at the beginning was in terms of the so whether you can attribute agency to some automated system, but this, for instance, was in the context of scientific research, and whether we can say that we instruments create science in a sense, right?
Yeah, or at least that they do parts of the research process themselves. I would phrase it more like this. I wouldn't say that they necessarily create, but that they can perform part of the research process by themselves. That yeah. we are interested in finding those, whatever this research process in the end might be,
yeah.
I think.
Because yeah. the way in which I was thinking about it is that the creativity with respect to the agency, you can look at this from an epistemic perspective, and then you can pretty easily claim that they have this role with all the nuances yeah. that you also went through. Clearly, the way in which an analog instrument co-creates or co-produces is not the same as a digital instrument, etc. But then there are normative considerations that kick in and that are much more complex. And this is the reason why, for instance, major academic publishers are not allowing ChatGPT to be listed as an author, because this instrument does not comply to the legal definition of author, you see? Yeah. But that's normative. That yes. It's not an epistemic description of what they do. And so I was wondering whether, if you have to answer this type of question, then at the end, the answer may be more in the line of normative considerations. For instance, if we have responsibility for the scientific results that we establish, I mean, ascribing full agency to an instrument is a dangerous move, because then nobody is really responsible,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Who is going to retract the false or the misleading article? Not the digital technology. Yeah. Item, right?
Yes, but I think I agree with you in the sense that I think that agency comes in degrees. Yeah. So where you would maybe say that they can do certain, or they could function kind of like an agent, or what we describe as an agent, then how much we can predict of their behavior might be very, they might only exhibit very limited behavior with very limited options. So when we think about automated systems, I would say, okay, they are agentive-like, maybe, the current ones, so we can interact with them differently than before, and maybe in your framework we could even say that these fulfill more of the role of the human epistemic agent, in that they can work together with other epistemic artificial agents to create knowledge. But we would always have to say, okay, still as a normative framework, like how much complexity should this agent have? How much complex agency is it able to exhibit for us to say, okay, and now we also give it responsibility or...
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
So yeah. I think all these considerations kind of come in where you run your analysis yes. and why you want to exclude more than yes. include.
Yeah.
Okay. So okay. Maud again.
And maybe also thank one more time Federica for coming here. Yeah. And all the speakers and the audience, and then we have everyone. Yeah, so thank you all for coming. It was really inspiring and nice. You can always contact us if you want to know more or read Federica's book. As said before, it's in the library. So enjoy, and also I know that there's now a grilling taking place, so enjoy that too. And have a nice...
Take the pretzels,
please, yes. And thank you all for joining.